When it comes to food, at least, white could be beautiful, but mostly it's not.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 552nd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in St. Petersport who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. But wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phone. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
And Parmley Taff on sales. Hello, Parmley. Folks, a portrait of two foods. Last week, I stopped by the Chino family's roadside vegetable stand in Rancho Santa Fe, California. As usual this time of year, the vegetable shop's parking lot was packed full with luxury cars, while their drivers were standing in line 15 deep waiting to buy sweet corn for a Buccaneer. And while I was standing there waiting, I gazed at the Chino's display of colorful vegetables and was just amazed at the stunning red rainbow of reds and greens and golds and purples just waiting to be consumed by the hungry me. Now, the Chino family receives absolutely nothing from the federal government to grow their crops. On the contrary, the family must rely on those of us who stand in line with cash in hand to pay their way. That is the portrait of one food, and now for the other. Yesterday, a package of white food was given to me at no charge. Before I ate this freebie, I turned the package over to look at the ingredients, and this is what I found. Corn syrup solids, partially hydrogenated soybean oil, sodium cationate, dipotassium phosphate, sodium silicoaluminate, artificial colors, mono and diglycerides, soy lecithin, and the crown jewel of all cheap foods, artificial flavors. Now, the government, which, when it gets right down to it, is you and I, subsidizes several ingredients in this cheap white food to the tune of $1 billion a year. And this leads us to ask, why do we subsidize these cheap white foods, and why do we not subsidize foods of color? Here to help us explore this question, we have Jim Matavalli, who is the editor of E! Magazine. Jim, welcome to the Food Chain.
Great to be on.
Hey, E! Magazine, brand new, almost brand new. Tell us a little bit about it.
No, we've actually been around since 1990.
Ooh, not brand new at all. Maybe it's maybe it's new in my mailbox then.
I think people tend to think that we're a online publication because E! Magazine sounds like that to people, but we're not, and we're a paper magazine. Of course, we have a big website, but we're launched in 1990.
So E stands for?
Environment.
It doesn't stand for electronic. It stands for environment. It's you are the environment magazine.
Yeah.
And
we have quite a presence on the newsstand, more than most environmental magazines. So we really have a mainstream audience.
Mm-hmm. And one of the articles in your E! Magazine happened to catch my eye just as a time when I was really thinking about this whole notion of the foods we eat, the colorful foods. You know, I was visiting the Chinos down in Southern California, and the range of colors was just spectacular. And it was just, you know, I got to thinking about the white foods and the colorful foods and the differences in the two. And here's an article in your magazine called Kicking the White Stuff. And so that's how we brought you into the program today. We want to learn a little bit about your magazine and also talk a little bit about the nature of the foods that we eat. With respect to your magazine and agriculture, what is the relationship, Jim, that you see that exists between the environmental movement and agriculture?
Oh, I think it's a really huge one because the conventional agriculture uses so much herbicide and pesticide, and there's a big battle now raging over organics. Organics are getting a whole lot more of the market, the organic markets, the natural food markets like Wild Oats and Whole Foods are capturing a whole lot more of the market. You've got companies like Trader Joe's coming up offering discount organics, which I think is a really good thing. And you have mainstream supermarkets that are now offering organic milk and farm fresh eggs and all kinds of different things that would not never have been in mainstream supermarkets. And it doesn't have to be in trendy areas anymore. Everywhere in the country, that's the case. I think people have gotten very concerned also about genetic modification of ingredients and food irradiation, which we also wrote about in this coming issue. And really the only way that you can avoid these things is to go organic, which an increasingly large number of people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say those are all pretty serious environmental issues. And we also write a lot about the so-called local food movement, because I think local is the new organic in a lot of ways. People are very concerned about food transportation. That's one of the reasons we rail about bottled water.
Right.
The idea that water would come from Fiji or Iceland when we have some of the best water in our taps.
It's pretty
in
good. It's a pretty good scam, isn't it?
I mean, it's a total scam. It's a beverage industry bonanza, and it really needs to be exposed at every possible juncture. And an interesting thing we wrote about this recently is the bottle bills, which I think we only have in like 12 or 13 states, because the beverage industry fights bottle bills very persistently. Those bills do not cover water bottles, which is why you see so many Poland Spring water bottles and Aquafina and all these others littering the landscape, because there's no
redemption
return on them, even in states that do have bottle bills, because the bills were written before people drank bottled water.
Huh.
So the industry has been fiercely resisting the idea of including bottled water bottles in bottle bills. It's ridiculous.
And it is ridiculous. So there really is a very synergistic, I guess, I hate to use that word, but I will anyway, relationship between the environmental movement and the movement toward a, I don't know what people call a more sustainable form of agriculture.
Oh, totally. It's one of our big subjects at E! Magazine. We talk about it constantly. It's probably 1 in 10 cover stories has something to do with food.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a regular column called Eating Right that's in every issue.
Which, of course, is where I found the Kicking the White stuff.
Right, yeah. Right. And that's a very personal piece by Gene Johnson. And I think you could probably find it online at our website if you're not already a subscriber, that she talks about her own personal experience where she assumed that, you know, white foods was the only food to eat. And
what exactly does she mean by white foods?
Well,
I mean, I was handed yesterday, you know, a stewardess on an airplane handed me a package of artificial dairy creamer. And, you know, of course, didn't consume it, but I turned it over and read the directions. And what struck me is that our government is subsidizing several of the ingredients in this stuff. And then, you know, I look at somebody like a family farmer like the Chinos down in Rancho Santa Fe, and the government is not subsidizing that kind of agriculture at all. And the disparity just really caught me. So when I picked up your article, Kicking the White Stuff, I thought, you know, this is right up my alley here. So what do we mean by white stuff?
Well, it's defined by Gene Johnson as the standard American diet, prepackaged food staunchly set in a pale, even ghostly tradition, heavily laced with fat, sugar, and salt. That's basically it. You know, things made with white flour, like white bread or pasta and that kind of stuff.
Well, I like a little bit of white flour in my pancakes, and I'm the breakfast cook in our family, and I like to use a little bit of white flour because I think it's kind of like kindling for the fire, you know. It gets things going really quickly in the digestive tract, but not a lot of it, a little of it.
The
world seems to be made of a lot of it.
The worst culprit in food today, I think, is high fructose corn syrup.
Which, of course, is a government subsidy, correct?
Right, and is a substitute for sugar, but it's actually worse for you than sugar.
Why is that?
The body doesn't process it nearly as well as it does sugar. It definitely will make you fat quicker, which is something I would think would concern people, but it also happens to be much cheaper than sugar, which is why industry has switched heavily to it. Mm-hmm. It's a corn product. It's made from corn. But in nutrition terms, it's a real disaster, and it's in just about anything. Pick up any prepackaged food and look at it, you're likely to see that.
Okay, we're going to
sweetener.
We're going to take a quick break here, Jim. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're asking the big question, which is, why do we, as a people, subsidize white foods, but not foods of color? We are really curious to know what you think. Why are we doing this? Pick up your phone and join us today. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have Jim Modavalli, who was the editor of E! Magazine, where I picked up the story, a story called Kicking the White Stuff. And when we get back from this break, we'll talk about exactly what white stuff is and how our government is subsidizing it. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, here's a question we want you to answer. Why do we subsidize white foods, but not foods of color? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. That is the question we're exploring today. And we're exploring it with Jim Modavalli, who is the editor of E! Magazine, in which I found an article entitled Kicking the White Stuff. Jim, we're talking a little bit about white stuff. Let's see if we can reach a kind of a definition for it. You know, I've kind of joked at the white stuff being white food, like being the artificial dairy creamer that I find, but really it's all throughout our food chain, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think if you look at why we subsidize it, it's some of our larger crops like corn and mm-hmm. wheat, and traditionally
soybeans,
those are big agribusiness crops. So the largest farms are the producers of corn and soybeans in some cases, which in the U.S., even though it's very good human food, is mainly used for animal feed. And the farm bill that I believe that was just passed...
Well, they're fighting it through.
Yeah, I believe the new farm bill removes some subsidies for farms that you know have like over $1 million gross sales, something like that. But it's not a huge reform, and these price supports for these crops have been in place for like 50 years.
Since the Great Depression, yeah.
Right.
So what we're doing is we're giving direction to our agriculture. We're telling our farmers that we want them to grow white food.
Right.
So
there's relatively little support for fresh fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, so the question is why? You know, why on earth are we subsidizing this white stuff? Is it good for us?
I would say, no, I don't think it's because it has nothing to do with that. It just has to do with the fact that they have larger lobbies.
Uh-huh.
And I think the Farm Bureau plays a particularly onerous role in this because it is totally focused on supporting big agribusiness concerns.
Well, that would be the National Farm Bureau then. You know,
right.
We have a local Farm Bureau here. The
National Farm Bureau does, but I think its role is largely negative.
Huh. So when we say white food, we're talking not only about sugars, but other highly refined foods, correct?
Yes.
But we're talking about taking wheat
flour.
Well, like,
I would say wheat as an example is a product that's very refined, and it's not inherently, it doesn't come processed. It just gets processed a whole lot.
So why white flour? Why do we take
part of what we called FAD, the standard American diet.
Mm-hmm.
I personally was raised on Wonder Bread type stuff that's like a sponge.
Yeah, do you remember in school taking Wonder Bread and wadding it up into little balls and then using it
yeah,
as ammunition
stick
in
to the
lunch
ceiling.
And stick to the siag. So, yeah, I remember that.
It's so highly processed and refined that its relationship to the original wheat plant is pretty tenuous, but it's the way most people have come to...
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy their bread. And actually, I'm amazed when I go in the supermarket now and I see almost all the bread, even the so-called whole wheat bread, is in that spongy,
right,
airy kind of texture. And you have to go to the health food part of the supermarket to really find
the hippie section, right?
Any whole grain type of bread.
Well, you know, whole grains are heavier. They take a little bit more, but that's where all the food value is. Why did we take wheat, the wheat germ, and process the nutrients out of it? I mean, what were we going for there? What is the objective in the white food?
Well, I would say in defense of American diet, I think in the last 20 or 30 years, people have really opened themselves up to a lot of new things. And that's why you see Thai restaurants growing up all over America. And sushi is very, very popular.
Which incidentally is not all that great of a source of nutrients, sushi.
No, probably not. But I would say I was amazed to read recently that salsa is now more popular than ketchup. So I would say some modifications are happening to the standard American diet, and the time when everything was meat and potatoes is probably past us. And I think you could probably make a whole lot of money if you started a sushi fast food chain. But so, you know, I think there is some progress being made, but people still do like their food pretty bland.
Well, what relationship does this white food have on our... What does it do to our diets? What does it do to us?
Well,
this
I think...
highly refined stuff.
You read a list of ingredients...
Right.
...that was in a package of non-dairy creamer, and I think that's typical, and... We know very little of how all these different ingredients act upon each other when they're combined like that. The same way we don't know chemicals that are in many products that are around our house. We don't know that much about them because we've tested only a tiny number of chemicals, and we very seldom test them in combination with each other. And as you noted, what you experience is very much a lot of chemicals in combination with each other.
Right.
And, the exact health effect of that, is very unclear because we haven't studied it very much.
Well, what is not unclear is the degree to which we are subjecting ourselves to the potential for diabetes.
Right. And I think what also is very clear is the health benefits of eating these colorful foods.
And before we go there, let's focus a little bit on the deleterious effects, because I don't think people really are making a connection. Oh, maybe they are. I mean, it's not hard to, you know, you walk into a crowd of people and you see that we've just become overweight. And where are we picking up all that weight? Well, it's from those highly refined foods that have very little nutrient content in them. So we keep eating the highly refined foods looking for the nutrient contents that we crave, and that's what happens to our body. But let's continue with this. What happens to our minds?
Well, I think our minds get conditioned to expect food to be highly processed because we get used to the taste of that. If you've grown up on that, it takes a while to sort of wean yourself from that.
Wean yourself from the sugary
taste. I think I was lucky enough to have been raised at the time of the hippie movement. And I would say the first time I ever heard about health foods or eating higher on the food chain and all was probably from hippies.
Right, right.
And I remember that, you know, they used to make this hippie bread that was marvelously thick and crusty and tasted of the earth.
Uh-huh.
And even before I realized that had a health effect, I really liked that, and I think that led me into eating better.
And there was a whole meal in there. You know, one of the things that always struck me was the relationship between the nutrient content of food and intelligence. And I did a program with Dr. Steven Schoenthaler, who's a criminologist from the Cal State University system. And he's done a study wherein he studies the nutrient content of food and criminal behavior in controlled populations like prisons and schools. And he's learned that when you take away the junk food and then give half the population a plain old multivitamin and the other half of the population a sugar pill, and that he measures an incredible difference in the criminal behavior of those who have received the multivitamin, something like 47% less criminal behavior.
And, you know, there's also like a huge epidemic of hyperactivity among children.
Children.
And I just wrote a story that's coming out in the next issue that's about sustainable school lunches.
Ah.
And looking at that issue. And I think schools are starting to take away the soda machines. This is mm-hmm. actually true of my kids' school, that they no longer can buy soda during the day, which I think is a great thing. The only soda machine is in the teacher's lounge.
Which is, just where they need it.
I don't know,
right?
They should be drinking it either. But
and what about the relationship then between these white foods and the propensity of school districts to medicate children?
Well, I think they're very related. Like I said, this hyperactivity thing probably has something to do with diet. And kids are certainly eating a lot of junk food and a lot of processed food, and that's probably having an effect. I'm not sure you can... I was about to say that you can't measure it, but there are studies, as you've indicated, that make a connection with, say, prisoners or probably with students, too. You could measure
Same kind of difference.
But it's amazing how few schools have really...
come to grips with it.
Yeah, and I think on the college level, a number of colleges are now offering sustainable dining halls or organic food in the dining hall. Yale has done this.
We're going to have to take a quick break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. We're talking with Jim Montevalli about foods and the question of the day, why do we subsidize white foods but not foods of color? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Hey, here's a meal for you. Corn syrup solids, partially hydrogenated soybean oil, sodium cationate, dipotassium phosphate, sodium silicoaluminate, artificial colors, mono and diglycerides, soy lecithin, and the crown jewel of all cheap foods, artificial flavors. That is white food, and that's what is cheap these days, and that is what our government is subsidizing. And when I say our government, that of course means you and I. We take money out of our pocketbooks every year, and we give it to some farmers to grow these mass-produced things that become white foods. And those white foods have a profound impact on our diet and on our physical well-being. And so the question of the day is, why do we subsidize white foods but not foods of color? And here to help us explore that question, we have Jim Montevalli, who is the editor of E! Magazine. Jim, in the article Kicking the White Stuff, your writer Gene Johnson talks a little bit about whole foods and foods of color. What does she mean by whole foods?
Well, I think it's food that's been processed. Food that hasn't been processed to death, which is true of this white food. I mean, I think in its purest form, it's raw food, and there's actually people out there who say that as soon as you start cooking food, you're processing it, and you're robbing it of nutrients, and I think that's a pretty extreme view. Not many people are willing to make the commitment to eat just raw food, and it's hard to get enough calories on that diet. But they have a certain point to make. I think another point I think is important is that it is very true that these white foods are inexpensive. I think you just mentioned that, and I think that's really important, because one of the reasons people have gotten addicted to this diet is it's the cheapest thing out there, and it's partly because we subsidize it.
Mm-hmm.
But we make so many products out of corn because it's really, really inexpensive. Interestingly enough, the price of corn has been going up, and part of the reason for that is we're making ethanol out of it.
Right.
There's a competition of food versus fuel now.
Which is having a profound impact on the price of foods. But is cheap food really cheap? I mean,
it's not cheap in terms of what you will end up being the health costs you have. And I think, as you said, there's an epidemic of things like allergies and diabetes
and
other food-related ailments that
I'm going to invent a new ailment from cheap food. It's called intelligence deficit disorder, IDD.
I think hyperactivity is definitely a side effect of this diet, because it's so high in sugar.
And so deficient in nutrients. And, you know, the body, you can feed it the sugars, but it still needs the minerals and the vitamins. And when you don't get it from your food, you want to keep chasing it in the same nutrient deficient foods that is cheap, right?
Right.
So you go back to the junk food and you keep going back there. So how do we kick this stuff? That's the name of your article, Kicking the White Stuff. How do we kick this stuff?
Well, I think it's really beneficial that at this point there's a whole lot of ways people can get a better diet, and there are there's both farmers markets in most parts of the country, I'm sure. In most of your listening area, people can find farmers markets where you can buy just picked produce. It's usually not that expensive when you're buying directly from the farmer. There's also what's called community-supported agriculture. And in that form, you basically sign on to buy a portion of a farmer's crop, and that gives the farmer capital to work with. And it guarantees you a whole season's worth of fresh vegetables. And increasingly, our supermarkets offer organic produce of all different kinds, and the prices for that have come down a whole lot. I think the downside of this is now big corporations have seen the lucrative organic market and are getting into it heavily, with the result that some of their methods are pretty similar to factory farm methods, particularly if I'm talking about raising meat. If you're not a vegetarian and you want to eat healthier meat, you may be buying cage-free eggs or something like that. But the methods by which cage-free eggs are produced are really not that different from factory conditions.
Right. Well,
so unless you're buying from a small farm, chances are it's going to be a huge operation with 50,000 chickens in one room. And if they're not in cages, that's a little bit better, but not a whole lot better.
Right. So some say that one of the largest organic farmers in the world is now the Chinese Red Army. And if you can get the certification, you can do whatever you want, I guess. I don't know.
And these same corporate interests have been lobbying to weaken the organic standards also, which I think is a real regressive step not be allowed.
Let's talk a little bit about this notion of subsidizing. You know, when we go to the farmers markets, when we go to places like the Chino's Vegetable Shop or roadside stands, or when we go direct to a farmer, are we really kind of betting against ourselves? You know, on one hand, we're taking all of our money and subsidizing the cheap white food. And on the other hand, we're buying, you know, the foods of color, the whole foods that carry the nutrients that our body needs. So are we kind of betting against ourselves there?
Yeah, I would say that. And it's bizarre, the situation we've developed, where it actually becomes cheaper to import, say, corn from Florida than it is to buy it from the farmer down the road who's producing it. And I was recently had this situation where I was in Vermont, and there was a farm stand selling corn, and I had passed many corn fields on the way to get there, and he told me that all the corn he was selling was from Florida because it was much cheaper than selling the local Vermont-grown corn. And I think that's true. I have a...
Why is that true?
Because it's a very, very large farm, and food transportation costs have been very, very low traditionally in America. Now that we have $3 a gallon gasoline, it's going up, but that's been a fairly insignificant part of the food budget. The fact that the average piece of produce travels 1,500 miles and the apple you eat is more likely to come from Chile than it is from Washington State, that has been considered a rational part of the food business until recently, and the people are questioning that now. They want to see more local food. I also think that the end of cheap oil is upon us, and that we'll be able to maintain this system of food transportation anyway. So I think that's headed for a fall in any case. But I think it's, when you consider where we are in terms of oil and global warming, the fact that people are buying water from Fiji and apples from Chile is just, on a collision course with reality.
And that's what we want to talk about when we get back. The relationship between the environmental movement and the food movement. Are they synonymous? What do you think? The question of the day, why do we subsidize white foods but not foods of color? Phone numbers, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us. We're talking with Jim Montevalli, who is the editor of E! Magazine, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back, please do. Stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, what do you think out there? We spend a lot of money, our money, your money, and my money, subsidizing the production of white foods here in the United States. White foods being those things that go into our processed foods, and those processed foods that go into our bodies and make us overweight and diabetic and kind of crazy. And yet we spend nothing on the foods of color, those things that carry our the nutrient contents that our bodies crave. So why do we subsidize white foods but not foods of color? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We're talking with Jim Matavalli, editor of E! Magazine, the environmental magazine. Jim, let's go to the phones. Let's pick up Bob. Bob, welcome to the food chain.
Hey, good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, sir. I the only comment I wanted to make was I think Jim hit the nail on the head when you're asking why are we subsidizing white foods more is because of the lobby. The lobby is the most powerful thing there is, and I kind of like to make a comparison to the tobacco industry. I think the most we're ever going to expect in our lifetime to see is these white food advocates. I mean, at the worst case scenario, the best case scenario is doing what the tobacco industry is doing right now, telling us that we're selling you is bad for your health, but we do have a 2-for-1 offer right now. It's not going to get any better for a long time.
Buy two and get one. So you think it's just the money. So what do you do? How do you combat this?
I don't know what we can do. As a grower, I'm really concerned about the locally grown produce. It's a huge movement going on right now, and as a California grower, it's kind of scary for us to.
Oh, why is that?
Well, because I mean, it's converting to a local areas, and a lot of these areas, number one, have no food safety concerns whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you saw the deal on NBC News the other night, how they're growing all these foods in these urban plots where they tore buildings down. They got gardens and everybody's just going crazy and are happy about it, and you look at some of the issues of food safety, and cadmium is a major problem that they found in some of those gardens. But locally grown produce, I mean, sure, it's a great idea, but it can really come back with some major problems too.
Jim?
Yeah,
what do you think?
I think he's right. I think we have to take our food supply into our own into our own hands and really do what we can, really read up on it. Maybe you won't see it in all the mainstream sources. You won't see very much about it, but the web is a great resource to learn more mm-hmm. about what is in your food. I recommend a publication called Nutrition Action, which really does great stuff about what's good, what isn't, and they actually analyze very popular food items, like say fast food, Mexican food. Is that really good for you? Is that kind of Chinese food most people eat in restaurants, is that good for you? They look at all this kinds of stuff, and they really steer you towards a healthier diet with a whole lot of whole foods and colorful foods, as we've been talking about.
Right.
And they have actually something like 500,000 subscribers, and E! Magazine does deal with this stuff in pretty much every issue, and people can go to emagazine.com and see what we're up to. You can read a lot of our stuff online. You really can get a pretty good grounding.
Let me ask you a question as a representative of the environmental movement, Jim. You take somebody like Bob here, who's a commercial grower here in California, and I think if the commercial growers in California have had one problem, it's been the environmental community, who has put so many restrictions and regulations on growing crops in California that a good percentage of California production has run away to foreign lands. Bob, am I wrong?
Has run away what?
Has gone offshore.
Oh,
moved
yes,
to Mexico.
Exactly. And what's sad is that, you know, we're being hit hard by the regulatory end of it, but where are the regulations when you see this food that's cheaper coming from offshore or from Mexico? Who's watching? Who's watching? Is the fox guard in the hen house there?
It's well, the government inspects 1.5% of all the food that's coming into the country.
There you go.
Bob, thanks for the call.
You bet.
Okay,
well, I think we found recently with this pet food scandal that you really have to look at food that's being imported quite a bit. And we do inspect a whole lot less than they do in Europe, as an example. In Europe, if they find any kind of irregularity, then they switch to inspecting 100%. They probably, as a rule, inspect at least 20% of all the food that's imported, which is way more than our inspection.
So we're down somewhere around 1%.
Something like that. It's actually the same amount of inspection that's done of foreign containers that come into the United States, which is pretty scary when you think about terrorism.
Yeah, well, here's Roy, who is a farmer with a particularly interesting notion with respect to subsidies. Roy, welcome to the food chain.
Yeah, I think that subsidies should be eliminated completely because it just keeps the food costs low and it keeps the farmer in the hole all the time. And I also think that if we're not allowed to farm properly with our fertilizers and chemicals, the world would be starving to death right now. And pretty soon, with all your rules and regulations, you're going to be dependent on your food chain just like you are your oil from foreign countries, because farmers are not going to hit it in here. That's basic.
Well, I would say in response to that, that there's new studies that show that organic yields can actually be more than conventional yields. I found that really eye-opening to see the studies.
Well, you know, Roy does bring up a couple of interesting points, which will help us conclude this program when we get back from this break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking with Jim Montevalli, who is the editor of E! Magazine. We're talking about white foods and why we, as a people, subsidize the production of white foods, but not the foods of color. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to KnoxGardenBox.com. That's K-N-O-X, GardenBox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
Well, folks, it's your money, and a lot of your money. Billions of dollars of every year that we spend going into the development of white foods. You know, the extracts from corn, wheat, soybeans that make up the processed food that we eat so much of. And you can tell that we eat so much of it just by watching the crowds of people walking down the street. And you see, my goodness, we're eating too much of something, and yet that's where we're putting all of our money. We don't subsidize the production of foods of color at all. We rely on the money that we spend and people standing in line with cash in their hand to support those farmers. So the farmers that we had called, both Bob and Roy, brought up a couple interesting points with respect to their industry, the industry of agriculture, the production of agriculture, and their fear that they're kind of going to be run out of the country by the rules that we put down to protect our environment. Jim Matavalli is the editor of E! Magazine. Do you see a happy medium where the environmental community can work together with agriculture to strengthen the food chain that we deserve?
Yes. Well, I think the happy medium is on organic agriculture, and I think a lot of farmers are switching to that because, frankly, they can make more money with organic produce than they can with conventional. And in 2 or 3 years, you can have your land certified for organic production and really tap into some very lucrative markets. And I think farmers are switching to that, and they find that the organic agriculture is better for their land, better for their soil, saves them a whole lot of money on pesticides and all that kind of stuff that they've been buying. And we gain a homegrown form of food production, of whole food production, which I think is really good. And I personally do understand, as one of the callers mentioned, that pesticides have allowed us to increase farm yields.
Right.
And my father actually was in the chemical fertilizer business, and we lived in India for a while where he was part of the Green Revolution
right.
in India. So I'm well
aware of that.
A patron
saint of Norman
issue.
Borlaug, right?
What's that?
A patron saint of Norman Borlaug.
Yeah. But I think in the long run, the Green Revolution is not sustainable simply because I think we're starting to see the results of such widespread pesticide and herbicide mm-hmm. use. And one of the tragedies in India is that farmers have actually, and this is not just one, but hundreds of farmers in India have committed suicide by actually drinking their own pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty horrible to contemplate, but they found that their reliance on pesticides was not fiscally supportable, and they faced ruin as a result of their
heavy
reliance.
Well, let me ask you this. What about this notion that we can demand our farmers to be so clean that they have to leave this country to produce over in foreign lands, and those of us who chase them away end up buying that food that comes from China?
Yeah, well, that's obviously a problem, and I think that any sort of farm policy should be based on listening to farmers in this country and what they need and what works for them, and we shouldn't be penalizing American farmers. We should do things that in the long run will strengthen American agriculture. I don't think what we usually put in the farm bill really does that, because it tends to subsidize big farmers at the expense of smaller ones. And the result is that we have way fewer family farms than we used to. It's increasingly just have very large factory type of agriculture. And I don't think that's in anyone's best interest.
Well, Jim Matavalli, editor of E! Magazine, we thank you for joining us today, and we thank all of you out there for joining us. We ask you to tune in next week for more What's Eating What Radio, and remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.